sitting in the morning sun. I'll be sitting when the evening comes.
All right, welcome
comes.
Back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, before we went to break, man, you know, we were talking about this decision, Supreme Court decision that was made. And, you know, part of this, Sandy, is, what is it, a 6-3 majority?
Yeah.
Right now that conservative, is it safe to say conservative-leaning justices?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, and and this one in particular, Justice Roberts, who's been more or less the more middle-of-the-road guy, he ended up writing the decision, which suggests to me that this was, and I thought it was clearly going to be the outcome. But, you know, in today's world where we have these complicated problems, we now have this Supreme Court who wants to deal with things in a very simplistic manner, right? Black and white, and that's an ironic term to use for this particular decision, but you know, the elimination of affirmative action, and you're right, the university use of it is just the tip of the iceberg in terms of the other applications and the corporate applications of it, the municipal applications and government applications that require favoring minority businesses, all these things that are being done to try and reverse a problem we have, which has historical roots. You know, the segregation problem, the problem of segregation in housing is a very significant issue, and the one hope I have is that geographic, the unique geographic segregation, which is one of the most invidious parts of our racial problem in America and one of the most direct parts, can now be used as an alternative to race to try and accomplish some of the same outcomes, so that we can have the geography of zip codes, for instance, become an important factor in things like contracting, university admissions, et cetera. But you know, we need to attack the problem directly, and we need to do it, I guess, in a way that can't turn around on us.
You know, Sandy, at the root of all of it, I think when you look at sheer numbers, because I think part of all of this is the fact that black people make up 12-13% of the population of this nation, and so we're still a very small minority.
Yeah, and if you looked at the economically impoverished, the blacks undoubtedly make up a larger percentage of that. But even if it was double the number, 25% or 30%, you still have a majority of non-blacks in the economically deprived category.
Right.
I've never seen the data. It would be interesting to me to see what that data is. What percent of economically deprived America is African American?
So, and I think, Sandy, a misconception of many whites in this nation that all of these safety nets that you constantly talk about are all going to blacks and minorities, and so people are so willing to say, we want to do away with those things, but they don't understand that when we're talking about people who are disadvantaged, it's not based on race. Race certainly plays a role in some of it, but the poor,
yeah,
they're a lot more poor.
Well, you know, Barack Obama, who had to be very careful about using race as an indicator, was pretty shrewd about that when he was president. He made sure that the public understood that some of these impoverished communities that were being given federal benefits were pure white. You know, the Appalachian poor are not black; they're white, and the economically deprived in the area called Appalachia is a huge number as a percentage of the people who live there, and so
who needs support? Who needs some help?
Who need all this help? So, right. I mean. Barack was pretty smart about that in terms of trying to focus the public's awareness on the fact that there were these essentially all-white impoverished areas who were getting benefits.
You know, Sandy, it's still pretty amazing to me that it's hard to have this discussion because people either angry or feel guilty or some way, shape, or form with this discussion. I think the way you and I are having it is the way it should be had, right? I mean, it should be had from the perspective of not anger.
Right.
Or any of those things. We need to look at it from the perspective of how can we make it right?
Well, we should look at it from the perspective of reality,
right?
And whatever the reality is, if everyone in a conversation understands reality, you can talk about it. It's not embarrassing. It's not anything. It's just the reality you're talking about. And I'm afraid that what's happening now is a recoil from reality. You know, this whole critical race theory is a recoil from the reality of our history. And we don't have to be ashamed of our current circumstance as whites to try and correct it. We just need to look at the reality of the circumstance and correct it.
So Sandy, that's all I'm saying. Let's correct it.
Yeah.
Right? Because you know, it is what it is. We see it for what it is. It can be corrected, and it should be corrected. And does it mean that by correcting it, you know, people are going to be hurt by correcting it? People have already been hurt by the way it's situated now.
Well, you know, people talk about being disadvantaged. And I know that Julia has called in and talked about the fact that her white husband and white father, you know, would have more difficulty. Yeah, you know, that is true, because as the world, as we get to the point where if everyone in the country had exactly the same opportunity and the same potential to compete against one another, white America would be more disadvantaged than it had been, because there was a time when white America had no competition
right.
from any of the others, right? It was America.
Right.
It was the America that was getting all the advantages, and everyone else was there for the ride, and not a very good ride. And so, yes, when the world changes, our opportunities change. And for some people, it's a lessening of opportunities. Just like as with globalization, the American domination of the world economy is diminishing, and it will diminish. We will become less dominant as an economy as the rest of the economies catch up on us. Now, is the alternative to that making sure that none of the other economies develop? My goodness, that can't be.
So then, Sandy, are you kind of saying that when it comes to the global economy, we can't go back to, you know, the way it was as Donald Trump is? You're not going back to that, right?
Yeah.
That genie's out of the bottle. America and its economy is never going to be what it was before. I don't care. And controlling the countries of the world, that's never going to happen again. Right? You can't take back.
Right. And the fact is that America is evolving demographically. And America will be benefited if we have 350 or 335 million Americans. We would be best served, you know, the volume of cream that you get out of milk is determined by the volume of milk, right? So if you're looking for cream, you want more milk. And if you're looking for high-value contributors to American society, you want everyone in America to be participants, because the number of high-value contributors that you will get out of the American society of 335 million people fully involved will be far greater than the amount you will get if all you're dealing with are the 190 million white Americans.
You know, Sandy, if we could get these other radio stations and these other, you know, like MSNBC and Fox News and others to have a conversation in this manner, right?
Yeah.
We'd be able to get somewhere. We'd be able to move forward. But it's hard when the way it's the conversation is centered. And you have to be. I know that I am cognizant of the fact that having this conversation as a black person. And knowing that the majority of my audience is white, that this conversation is, in many instances, hurtful to some.
I don't know if it's hurtful or just uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable. Better word, uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think it's uncomfortable. It's much less uncomfortable when it's simply had, when, you know, when you have the discussion. It's sort of like...
Because I haven't, you know, to be honest with you, Sandy, and I hate to interrupt you, but it's rare that I've even had this conversation.
Yeah,
because I know people are uncomfortable with it. But if we can't have it when the United States Supreme Court has just made this decision, if ever there was a time to have it, it's now, right?
Absolutely. And it's the time to have it is it relates to people seeing realities and then trying to see them in the same way. Now, there obviously is a reality in Milwaukee. There's a zip code in Milwaukee that is impoverished. There's a zip code
there's
in
more
Milwaukee.
Than one.
There's a couple of them. Very impoverished, very segregated, very black. Those zip codes are areas of high crime because of poverty.
Some of the worst zip codes in the nation.
Yes. And those are realities. And Milwaukee ought to look at those realities and say, hey, we're gonna work on solving that reality.
Okay, so we got a bunch of folk on the phone lines.
Good.
Let's go to Mark. Thank you, guys. You've been on for a while. I'm sorry I didn't see you. Let's go to Mark first. Mark, how you doing?
Doing okay, Earl. It's been a while. I usually I'm listening to Stephanie Miller, but this morning I just felt that heard you on earlier on the earlier program, and felt it is just to me it's remarkable that the Supreme Court, who likes to talk about constitutionality and enumeration of the Constitution of various rights and stuff, fails to recognize that in that self same Constitution there is no enumeration of the Constitution that actually gives them the power to decide the constitutionality of laws. And I'm not making a judgment whether they should or shouldn't, but it's interesting to me that they, you know, that these strict constitutionalists fail to recognize that particular detail, and then they can ignore the Ninth Amendment to the Constitution, that we have certain rights that aren't enumerated in the Constitution as citizens and persons that live in this country. But I mean, for affirmative action to be overturned like this, the whole idea that, oh, everybody's equal now, and we don't have anything to worry about, it's just denying reality, completely denying reality.
Well, hey, Mark, thank you very much for the call. Listen, we've got to go to a break. We'll let Sandy respond on the other side. CJ, Tom, Ken, Luann, we'll get you all on, I promise you, right after the break. Be right back.
Passed away when struck by a drunk driver. 1 million to three different individuals injured by drunk drivers. $1 million settlement to a man injured in a motorcycle accident. Call Gingras Thompson and Walks, 855-954-1186.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Overcast this afternoon with a slight chance for scattered storms. Highs level off around 89, west winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Cloudy skies expected tonight. Slight chance for isolated storms. Lows dip down to about 67. Chance for isolated thunderstorms again tomorrow. Highs level off around 84.
Georgia. All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always,
Georgia.
You can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Call back, because we'll go right to the phone lines. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. Let's go to CJ. Hey, CJ, good morning, man. You say what?
Good morning, Earl and Sandy. Before Sandy talks over me, if I could get out a couple of things. I am going to... quote, Winsome Earl Sears, the African-American lieutenant governor from Virginia. She said, about this decision. It's an awesome day in the United States. Ending discrimination by discrimination. And that's what it's been. That's what you're advocating for. And see, I have a dream. I have a dream. My four daughters will be judged.
Okay, CJ, we get it.
You're going to talk over me, aren't you, Earl? That's a great quote by Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King, judged by the content of their character and not the color.
Hey, CJ, let me say this to you. In the final moments leading up to the death of Dr. King, he said his dream had become a nightmare. Are you aware of that?
We're not that time anymore, Earl.
Okay.
We're living in this time, and Martin Luther King...
Well, you're the guy quoting Martin Luther King, CJ. You brought him up.
Yeah, and God bless him, because he wanted people judged by the content of their character.
Are we doing that now, CJ? Are we doing that now?
Well, we're going to now, aren't we, Earl? We're finally going to start doing that.
Let's let Sandy respond. Sandy?
Well... I guess I've long thought that affirmative action from the standpoint of a strict interpretation was doomed. And I thought that just like the legislation that was aimed at correcting voter rights in the South had a sunset on it that was related to when the Justice Department could determine that the problems that prevailed that required it were no longer in existence, that it wouldn't be allowed anymore. Because there has been a realization that in order to correct racial problems, you probably have to consider race. But then the question is, how long do you let that kind of a situation where you're considering race continue so that it doesn't become an invidious problem? And so, yes, the Supreme Court has done what it's done, but we continue to have racial problems in the United States, and we continue to have racial problems that are tied to poverty and tied to a variety of things. Like I was saying, they are in some respects tied to geography. So we have zip codes in which you can identify problems that are socioeconomic and in terms of that are also racial. And so there undoubtedly can, however, be geographic kinds of considerations put into effect that don't have an equal protection problem. And I'm sure that they will be employed by schools in something that looks much like affirmative action today that's designed to create diversity in a classroom and diversity in a university. I went to Harvard, and Harvard, like all of the universities today, talks about having a class that is an orchestra that has a piccolo, a violin, a bass, a drum, all of the different instruments, because you can't have all the same instrument. Harvard has 59 or 60,000 applicants. They could have an entire class of people who have 1,600 on their college boards, 36 on their ACTs, perfect scores, okay? They could have an entire class of those people. But it wouldn't be a class that you or I would want to be a part of, okay? It wouldn't be enjoyable. It wouldn't be diverse in ways that I'm not talking about racially diverse. It just wouldn't be diverse, okay? So they make sure that they have people who know how to play football in the class. They have people who know how to actually play the violin. They have people who are extremely good at chemistry. They have geniuses in math. They have all these different things, and they've used criteria to pick that class to make sure that it isn't just 100% people who have 1,600 on their college board scores. And so you can't take away from a school the opportunity to make a class of students, and by that I mean a diverse audience of students that will be good for the students who go there, will be good for the graduates of that school when they leave there, and will be good for society. And so that's the quest that these schools are on. And how they get there is going to be now changed, but it's not going to be interrupted. And your daughters will continue to be considered in that kind of a context. And if they have 1,600 on their college boards, and if they have perfect ACT scores of 36, they still might not get in to Stanford or Harvard or Northwestern or wherever, because those schools are looking for piccolos, violins, bass fiddles, and drums.
So, CJ, quickly, you want to respond?
Well, I think that's discrimination, and you folks are advocating for discrimination.
No, wait. Are you telling me that Harvard can't discriminate to have bass fiddles and drums? They can't decide that they want to have football players, basketball players, girl rowers on their crew?
The human family.
They can't have a... They can't...
Everybody loves somebody sometime. Everybody falls in love somehow.
Good morning.
Something.
Your Lingram Show. Sandy Williams. Earl has had to leave for, and we'll talk about some of the good things Earl does, but he's off to do some of that good stuff right now. We've been talking about the Supreme Court decision on affirmative action. And we've got some callers. Tom, please hold on for a minute. Lou Ann, you're on. What do you have to say about this?
I appreciate the conversation, because you're right about sometimes they're uncomfortable, but I have a hard time processing things, big decisions like this, without listening to what other people think and say. So, but I had some questions as you were talking. Like, I'm thinking the Supreme Court,
and I think you're breaking up. Can you repeat what you were saying?
Oh, the Supreme. Hold on a second here. Uh-huh. The Supreme Court. Supreme Court.
Yeah. Please go on.
Okay, I'm here. The Supreme Court makes that decision based on what they see in the Constitution and whether it's constitutional or not, right?
Yeah.
So that's how they're supposed to decide this. So for whatever their thinking and decisions were, you know, it's they're saying that this is not constitutional to use affirmative action, right?
Right.
What they're saying. And so my question is, what happens when they distribute federal funding based on the statistics that they draw up and the diversity and the, you know, they ask these questions about what race are you?
Is this going to affect the ability to go through the census? Yeah, there will be a question to the extent that there are things that are done that are explicitly based on race, that are done by government. Now, the universities are not, Harvard is a private university. They have a handle on that because they take federal money, and so this is really based on the federal grant recipient aspect of the university. But, you know, CJ called in earlier, maybe he'll call back after I talk about this, but Title IX is something that was enacted in order to support women in particularly the university setting, and to make sure that women athletics were given the same level of support as male athletics. And in many respects, Title IX was an affirmative action designed to improve the opportunity for women to participate in athletics in college. And it came from the same impulse as affirmative action, and it came at about the same time. So, you know, I think that's an interesting thing to consider at the same time as we're considering this affirmative action kind of a problem and the ways to address it. We have Tom from L.A. on. Tom, how are you this morning?
Hey, Sandy. First, we, the people, all of us, combined, collectively, make up the government, and we must never forget that. Second, this Supreme Court decision, in my opinion, has basically reasserted that that the Supreme Court supports white people over other races that are out there. And I find it very, very disgusting. I know it's just one case in terms of college applicants and things like that, but this kind of thing a lot of people are going to believe that, you know, the white people are the main authority on things, and it gives white people, I guess, a little bit more of a comfort that the Supreme Court has their back. Number two, I would love to know the background of people like CJ and Lou and all these people that say they didn't get anything from anybody and they did it on their own and their rugged individualism. Because you know what? I can bet you they've taken money from the government in one way or another, whether it be through a loan or whatever. And the last thing I would say is for all of you applicants out there, whether you are going for a job, whether you are going for a college application, there needs to be a trend started in this country, just like they're doing with the pronouns that are out there. Don't put, you know, like Sandy's name. Sandy's name is a unisex name. It can go either way. You know what? Don't put your male or female on the list. Put binary, gender binary, or you're not going to say. Do the same thing with race. Don't put your race on there. Just put your name, and if it's a unisex name, you're in that much more of an advantage. And if you have to change your name to a unisex name, which a lot of parents are doing today, they're naming their kids something that could go both boy or girl. And you know what? Let's go ahead and start judging on the resume rather than looking at it and seeing that, oh, there's a person named Jordan here and it's a male. So therefore Jordan's going to get a little bit of a step up. Well, you know what? Maybe that Jordan could be a girl. So maybe Jordan should actually just put non-binary, or you know, I'm not going to say.
Well,
what
you know, you're, Tom, you're pointing out the aspect of sex as being an issue that, you know, used to be white male supremacy. And now we've got essentially something like affirmative action ongoing for women, both in admissions to schools, but also in out there in the job market. Now, some of that is to simply make sure that women are measured on the same basis as men. But for instance, Title IX is actually different. For instance, I coach rowing, and young women rowers have a far greater opportunity to get athletic scholarships than men. Male rowers don't get scholarships. Female rowers do, and that's because they're trying to even things up with respect to the scholarships given to in football. You know, these things are complicated, and when you try to simplify them, particularly when you look at how do universities comprise their student body, how do employers comprise their payroll, it's a complicated set of issues, and businesses are interested in having diversity, particularly businesses that are involved with marketing. One of the amicus briefs that was filed was by Procter & Gamble. Procter & Gamble is in large part a marketing company. Everything they sell is at retail, and they're very interested in the retail audience that they can reach in business. And that has a lot to do with factors that might relate to race, might relate to sexual orientation, and might relate to sex. And so these things actually do have importance in the real world and can't simply be ignored. And the Supreme Court maybe in this decision gave some recognition to that, but the decision itself is too simplistic.
Here's the thing I don't understand, Sandy, is before you even say anything, which I've never heard you say, you know, you've been very, very methodical in your thinking and everything like that. But before you say anything, CJ says you're going to talk over him, and he says that you're going to, a lot of times you agree with him, and he doesn't even know it. Honestly, the guy needs to get on his meds. It's just the bottom line, because I don't see where you've really come down on agreement one way or another with people. What I do see is that we need to get back to what you've talked about, which is the thing I talk about the most nowadays, is that family that you talk about that makes the $60,000 a year. And, you know, and how is it that that person's going to make it when it's $64,000 just for the basic necessities that they pay for? I don't understand why it is that I thought that was brilliant that day that you did that. And, you know, and that goes across all races, genders, sexual orientation, everything.
Yeah, I mean, I think if we just focus on the problems that people have in America today, we'll be attacking many of the problems that relate as well to race. So if we attack the problem of child daycare, if we attack the problem of education, if we attack preschool education, if we attack health care for all, if we attack all those things, we'll find out that implicit in that will be the potential solution to a bunch of other problems. We have a couple of other callers, Tom. David from Mequon. Hey, Dave, how are you?
Good morning. Good morning, Sandy. Thank you for taking my call. No, I appreciate Tom's input from LA. However, I'm going to disagree with him on the status that, you know, I would not have had a problem. One of the big things that Biden did last year was put Jackson Brown as the first black woman in Supreme Court justice. But he emphasized that. He basically said, I'm going to put a black woman on the Supreme Court. Didn't matter if, I mean, so everybody else was considered out of the picture. So when you start doing that, you start just basing it, or you start giving more credence to just race, that was wrong when Reagan did it back into 1981 when you had Sandra Day O'Connor. He put her in because she was the first woman on the Supreme Court, period. And so I look at it this way. I actually have some neighbors that are Asian Americans. And they're very happy with that ruling because the affirmative action was disproportionately shutting out Asian Americans from getting into, you know, certain universities because there's so many of them that are academically qualified that they would overrepresent that demographic at the school. So they were, so rather than, you know, basing on merit, we're basing it on, okay, where are you coming from background-wise? What are you coming from race-wise? And really, you're doing that individually disservice by saying, okay, you know what? Maybe they didn't have the credentials to get into Harvard, but we're going to let you get in there anyways just because of the color of your skin. And so they have, more than likely, they're end up going to be putting in a situation where they probably should not have been admitted, and they're going to fail. So you're actually doing a disservice to that individual.
I think the schools have done a pretty good job of trying to make sure that the people that they do let in can sustain the workload of the school. And it is true, like I was saying, that the schools don't simply, when they look at merit, they are not looking simply at test scores. They're looking at a wide variety of kinds of merit. So that, for instance, they want a math genius, even if they're not good at English. They want someone who is a concert level violinist, even if their grades aren't quite what they should be to otherwise get in strictly on grades. So they're looking at all kinds of things, and then the Supreme Court has simply said, okay, you can look at things, but you can't look at this thing. You can't look at race. And I understand that impulse. I understand the 14th Amendment. I think everyone at the time that affirmative action was started understood that it was maybe swimming at least sideways through the current in terms of addressing race directly. But there is clearly an impulse in society to try and solve the racial problem that exists. And it's going to be harder to deal with the racial problem that exists without being able to deal with race directly. But I do think that there are some geographic measures that can be used, and it will remain true that, for instance, and I'm confident that it will not be an equal protection problem for them to consider, for instance, zip codes. They can consider states, they can consider zip codes, they can consider a variety of things. So I simply admonish us all to understand that we have a race problem in the United States. We do need to deal with it, and having to be totally blind to race is possibly going to make it harder to deal with it. We're coming up to a break shortly. Ken from Sturgeon Bay, let's get you started, and we'll come back to you after the break. Ken, what do you have to say?
Yes, 2% of the United States is Native American. 6.3% is Asian American, 13.6% is African American. African Americans are not the majority in this country. Native Americans are.
Wait, Ken, just we're gonna have to go to a break, but I want you to think through that logic, because majority is a mathematical number. We'll be back after the break. Sitting in for Earl. Earl had to leave a bit early today to do some of his good work. We're in the last segment of this morning's show. We had Ken on the line. Calvin, is Ken no longer on the line?
He seems to have been disconnected. He hopefully will call back.
Okay. Well, Ken was talking about, we were talking about the affirmative action and some of the fallout from it. Ken had had given us some interesting statistical data. I think the conclusion he drew from it was before the break was a little bit surprising, but basically he provided us with data as to the percentage of various ethnic groups in the United States. And Ken, we've got Ken, you back on the line. Ken, what were you going to draw from? You gave us those percentages.
Yeah,
you said Native Americans were the majority. Of course, they aren't the majority. They're 2.5%. But what was the point you were going to make?
The point being is 2% of the population in the United States is Native American. 6.3% is Asian. African American is 13.6%.
Uh-huh.
So this law discriminated against every Native American and Asian American.
Well, wait, well, no. Ken, there wasn't a law involved here. This is affirmative action programs that had been initiated by universities in an effort to create diversity in their classrooms. And it didn't explicitly I think Native Americans have been the beneficiary of this, and there's been an effort to bring Native Americans into classes based on race in the same way that there was with respect to African Americans. But the Asian Americans were upset about it because their view was that when they looked at the data at, for instance, Stanford and Harvard and some of the other universities, the on-paper data that they provided, their SAT scores, their scores on ACT tests, were higher on average and would have gotten them in if they were solely going to be accepted on those criteria. More of them would have gotten in than were accepted, and they felt that the benefit given to Black Americans was discriminating against them. So that was the thrust of the case, that's the conclusion maybe that you should be drawing from this.
So why in the world, like Tom from LA, say it's a white man's problem? Don't you think the Asian Americans a little ticked off because they couldn't get in?
No, they were, and I don't think he was saying that. I think what he was saying was that there are Asian Americans, but the a primary beneficiary of this, at least the view of it is, and the emotional arguments about affirmative action have been that my white son, who if he had applied to Harvard in 1950 would have gotten in, but he's not getting in today because they've decided to have different criteria for entry, and some of those criteria take into account race. We've got some other callers too. I've got Julie from Franklin, and we're coming into the end of this segment. It's the last segment, so kind of quickly, Julie.
Okay. Hi, Sandy.
Hi.
So I kind of go back to the simplistic outlook on things. Why isn't it just hard work and, you got to put the effort in and hard work in order to go to the school you want? I had to go to community college for 2 years before I went to the college that I got into. I don't think that the white men in the 50s white boys in the 50s that went to colleges just got in because they were white boys in the 50s. I think they had, you have to have good grades, and you have to want to go to school, and I'm sure not all their parents were just loaded with money. I think we're looking at it, we're making everybody victims. We're turning into this poor me, poor me, poor me.
Well, let me interrupt you, Julie, because we're getting a little tight, but I'm not sure whether the world is turning people into victims or people themselves are turning themselves into victims by how they're looking at how things are being handled. But I can tell you that as someone who was lucky enough to get into Harvard in 1962, I would have a great deal of trouble getting in today. And it isn't, it's for a variety of reasons. Number one, there today are 60,000 applicants, and back then there weren't anywhere near that number of applicants, so that makes a big difference. The schools have also decided that they're bent on creating classrooms that look a little different than the classrooms that I was participating in. When I went to Harvard, I think my class of 1,200 men had 20 African Americans. I was lucky enough to room with one of them, so I got to know the rest of them in the class. But the classes look a lot different today, and I'm confident that everyone who goes there is happy they do. Let me quickly go to Eric from Wauwatosa and then Bill from Oconomowoc. Eric?
Yeah, hello, hello. How are you doing, Sandy?
Good, how are you doing?
Good, good. I just wanted to jump on really quick to answer her question is because of the fact that history has shown us. This is history. We don't have to, like, sit there and think about it and dream about it. History has shown that white Christian cis males will discriminate against just about everybody, but black folks in particular. Anti-black hate and discrimination is kind of what runs this country in a sense. And those laws or programs or whatever were set up. And let's be honest, affirmative action has helped white women more than any other group in this country. And it's clearly in the statistics that that is the case. So this is basically just anti-black hate. The conservative court had a chance to do it. They enacted it. They're adding it to the voting rights bills that they've gutted over the years. And it's just more moving back to 1848. That's all it is. And to pretend that white, straight Christian males aren't going to discriminate against people when they have an opportunity. White people in this country, we've been conditioned to favor our own. And that's just the way it's going to be. We hold the levers of power. And this is just putting it back to where it's allowed to go about unabated.
Well, tribalism, yeah. Let me just close here for a minute. We've got just a couple of minutes. I wanted to talk about Earl. You know, Earl's a fellow who should be accepted. If he were a young man going to college, he should be accepted at every college that he applied to. And that would be regardless of his race. But I think his race has had something to do with creating who Earl Ingram is. Earl last Monday after the show went off to give blood, not to get paid for it. He didn't get paid for it. He wanted to volunteer to give blood because he thought that the world needed that. Today he left early because he's got this program for disadvantaged youth, summer program, and they're getting their first paycheck this morning, and the mayor from Milwaukee is going to be there, and so is Earl. It's a program he created. You know, people have excellence, and they display it in ways that are different from one another. And that excellence can be a commitment to community. It can be a commitment to study that gets them high grades. It can be an aptitude they inherit that gives them high SAT scores. It can be a whole variety of things. And that excellence will drive them through their life and into excellence in the world. And I guarantee you that Harvard University would be better off with Earl Ingram in it than him not in it if he were a young man applying. And that would be regardless of whether he had the highest test scores, but he has the highest human values that you can imagine. And so